In John chapter 18, we've come to the point now where Jesus is going to trial. I mean, we've already been through the betrayal in the garden, and he's been taken up on the hill to Upper Jerusalem, as some would call it, to the house of Caiaphas, the high priest. And he's been kind of bounced around between first Annas and then Caiaphas, and been asked questions. He was bound to be taken there. I mean, they bound him when they took him from the garden up there. And yet he was willing to go. I mean, he has known that this is what he was going to do. This was his purpose. This was his reason, you know, for coming to give himself. And yet now we're at that point where there is this process that he must endure of the trial and crucifixion. And as we get into the lesson tonight, you know, Jesus is going to be taken before Pilate. What we talked about some on Sunday was more of the, some have called the Jewish trial with Annas and Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. And now he's going to be sent to Pilate. And this is the Roman trial. And then he'll be sent to Herod, another Roman trial that I guess you would see. And so Jesus has known all along that this was coming and knows the outcome. But you know, from the physical standpoint, from the human standpoint, try to imagine what Jesus is thinking when he knows he's going to stand before men to give answer. And yet he knows that no matter what response he makes, no matter what answer he gives, it's not going to be accepted. You know, he knows his innocence. There's going to be claims that are made against him. Already we've read about, you know, false accusers that stood up, you know, to try to condemn Jesus and his actions. Those were kind of put off because even the false accusers couldn't get their stories the same. But now here he is. He's going to the Roman trial, and he's going to give answers. Well, in some cases he doesn't give answers, but when he does give answers, he's speaking the truth. He knows his innocence of what he's being charged against, but it doesn't really matter. The outcome is going to be the same. I mean, it's kind of a fearful thing if you were called into a court of law and you have to stand before the judge. I think most of us would have some fear and trepidation of what was going to happen and what would the outcome be. In this case, Jesus already knows what the outcome is going to be. He's going to be charged as guilty, even in all of his innocence. And he already knows where that's going to go. But I mean, just try to imagine, you know, standing before Pilate, and then he stands before Herod, and how brutal that's going to become as he, again, is bound and he's scourged and he's beaten on for crimes he didn't commit. That's where we are now. That's where our story is at now. But we think about these things to be reminded. This has to be something that we come away from the class with tonight. Understanding that Jesus knew what he was doing. He knew from the beginning what his coming to earth would entail, and that he did this willingly. I mean, we talked about when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he could see the mob coming out of the gate of the city and coming down the hill across the Kidron Valley. It was at night. He could see the torches and lanterns. He could have ran. I mean, there was time. He could have gone over the Mount of Olives to Bethany. He could have gone beyond. They would have known where he went. The point of emphasis has to be the fact that he did this willingly. As Jesus said in Matthew's account, I could have called 12 legions of angels. You know, he could have said, okay, I've had enough of this. I don't want this anymore. Boom. You know, he was out of the situation he was going. The point of emphasis has to be that willingly he is enduring what we're reading about tonight. And so here we are at the point of this Roman trial. The Roman trial to me is a little bit more of a trial than what we read about and him standing before Annas and Caiaphas, I struggle to even call that a trial. You know, I mean, the questions almost are not even honest. And the Jews have their agenda. And it, at least it seems like with Pilate that he doesn't see a reason to charge him with anything. He doesn't see the guilt. And he asks questions, and when Jesus answers, it doesn't give him any reason to say, you are guilty. And it is more of a trial to me when he stands before Pilate and Herod. And that's where we are tonight here in John chapter 18. And let's read a little bit here beginning in verse 28. And then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. And they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered and said to him, if he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. And then Pilate said to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. Therefore the Jews said to him, it's not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. And then Pilate entered the praetorium again, and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus answered him, are you speaking for yourself, or did others tell you this about me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? Jesus answered, you say rightly that I am the king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews, and he said to them, I find no fault in him at all. Well, that's kind of an interesting episode to kind of think about and work our way through a little bit. It's interesting that the Jews, being unable to render a judgment on their own on this, sent Jesus to the Roman governor just expecting that he would kind of take their word on the matter and just condemn Jesus to death. That this is what needs to be done, and he would just say, okay, guards, take him away. Well, there's a little bit more to the process than this. You know, Pilate, at least it appears, is trying to be at least somewhat honest about having a trial and trying to determine, is there guilt? I mean, when he asked those who brought him, you know, about why he was here, I mean, the response from the Jews was basically nothing more here than we wouldn't have come here if he wasn't guilty. Oh, okay, that answers it, and we should condemn him then. I mean, that seems to be the response that they were wanting back. But there was more to it than that. And Jesus, or Pilate called Jesus to come inside where he questioned him. We talked a little bit on Sunday. I want to back up on this point. Who was Pontius Pilate? I mean, he becomes such a key player in the story at this point. When we talked about some, I just want to review this again. I mean, who is this guy? Well, we would think of him as the governor. He might be called the governor. Well, what does that mean? I mean, where did he rule? What was his responsibility? What does that mean to be governor of Jerusalem? No, it's more than that. What was he the governor of?
It would be
Judea and even beyond, because like even up as far as like Caesarea in one of the accounts, it tells us that Pilate had come from Caesarea. Now, there was somebody who had a palace in Caesarea in this time. Who would that be? You know? No, not Caesar. Caesar's in Rome. But who did Caesar appoint over Palestine?
Herod.
See, it's not Pilate. I keep wanting to say Pilate. No. Pilate is a little more regional. Herod had a greater region. And so Herod would have answered directly to Caesar. And Pilate, as I'm understanding, more to Herod. But in Caesarea, you know, there was, in fact, one time I showed some pictures, of Caesarea, not Caesarea Philippi. That's a different place. Caesarea on the Mediterranean Sea. And even the foundation, the remnants, the ruins of Herod's palace is right there by the sea. We walked out on that. And so it's like, I mean, you can stand right where, you know, Pilate's palace was at. And in fact, there's some rooms that are presumed to be like cells. They look like they were cells. Very likely where the Apostle Paul was in prison for 2 years. Different story. But anyway, so Herod has a palace in Caesarea. Herod had tremendous power and had done some incredible things in Palestine and in Jerusalem during his reign. He had rebuilt the city. He had increased the size of Jerusalem, extended the walls around Jerusalem further, and had built big walls around the main part of Jerusalem. Of course, they were torn down in 70 AD, but that's another story too. But you know, Herod was an incredibly powerful ruler, and not just Jerusalem, but other places too that he had fortified and built big walls and nice cities like Caesarea. And so Pilate evidently spent a lot of time there too. You know, take it that he lived in the same palace as Herod did, but the text tells us that he came from Caesarea to Jerusalem because of the feast. Why would Pilate, you know, leave Caesarea, which is like a very pretty place on the Mediterranean Sea, and come to Jerusalem because the Jews were having a feast? Why would he do that? No, Pilate. Well, now, actually, Herod's there too, but doesn't say that about Herod. In one of the Gospels, it says that he came from Caesarea to Jerusalem because of the feast. Why? He's not a Jew. Why would he have come to Jerusalem? Levi.
He basically, his position was to make sure the Jews didn't riot.
Oh. I mean, what would happen to Pilate? You know, if things got all out of hand in Jerusalem, there was some kind of a big uprising, and it got way out of control, and Herod hears about that. I mean, it is the position and the responsibility of Pilate. You know, his office was to preserve order. He you know, his office would collect the tribute, taxes, and stuff like that. Would, in some cases, as we see right here, he would administer judgment. You know, he would keep, you know, justice. And this is what Pilate would do. It was in about quick. Well, what's interesting, too, is Herod is also here. Why is Herod here? Can't Pilate take care of this? There's a reason why Herod's here, too, and I would suspect it's the same reason as what you're saying, why Pilate is there. There's a reason behind it.
As long as the Caesars don't hear about anything going on in Judea,
yeah,
they're happy.
They're happy. That's right.
And that's why they were there.
That's right. And so Pilate would be the one who would keep everything peaceful and calm and not let any word get back to Herod, and certainly no word get back to Caesar. Because that would be a problem not just for him, but for Herod. Herod would be the one who would have to take care of Pilate so he could tell Caesar, we had a problem in Jerusalem and Pilate didn't take care of it. But Pilate is no more, you know, to save his own head. You know, so you can kind of see how that goes, Levi.
Didn't happen, you could get rid of them very easily.
That's right. Some have even said and speculated, no, I'm not getting too far on the limb on this, that Pilate wasn't necessarily thought of so well by Caesar. That's one reason that he was in Palestine. I don't know if that's true or not, but I read that. You know, there could be something to that, just something to kind of think about here. You know, and I think I mentioned on Sunday, it was in about 6 AD that Palestine had, from that time, Palestine had been governed by the Romans. And so at this point in history, Pilate had only been governor for 2 or 3 years, not such a long time. And he would serve as governor until 36 AD, about another 3 years, and then he would be deposed. And interestingly enough, as history would record, Pilate was a very bad man. He was unscrupulous. He was a very cruel man. And that was one of the reasons he was taken out, because he was too cruel. That's interesting to me, because the Romans, when it came to having their rule, well, they were pretty brutal themselves. And for them to think that Pilate was too cruel, he must have been one bad dude, you know? I mean, that's the best I can figure with that.
But we don't see that in how we thought was.
Exactly. And that's what's interesting to me. I've thought about that. You know, because, I mean, to me, it seems like, at least initially, the questions that he had for Jesus, and he says, I see no soul guilt. Goes back to the Jews, I see no guilt. I mean, that seems kind of fair to me.
Except he still had him beaten afterwards.
You know, the second time, you know, or what was it, the first time he had him beaten? I forget now. The first time or second.
Really, the callous is, well, I don't find any guilt in him, but I'm just to.
Why did he do that?
To satisfy the Jews.
I think he was probably trying to appease those Jews. It's like, okay, he's not really guilty. They're really mad at him, but I'll beat him up and bloody him up, and maybe that'll satisfy them. That's kind of the way I took that. You know, that maybe that'll make them happy. Well, that wasn't what they were looking for. They were wanting more than that.
I heard a sermon one time about Brother Clayton. He said,
He's gonna wash his hands. He's gonna kind of work his way. He thinks, you know, works his way out of that, James.
Until I watched an episode that showed how Julius Caesar became ruler of Rome, and here listening to how Pilate is answering these questions and the questions he's asking. Pilate might have been a little too cunning, a little too shrewd for the Caesars to keep him close to home. They put him far enough out, he can't cause any trouble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, be no problem down there. Just keep things quiet, and he's far enough away to, you know, from the epicenter, you know, of Rome to be an issue, to be a problem. Could be right.
Well, you know, we do have one reference that Jesus talked about Pilate mingling the blood of, I think it was the Galileans, with sacrifices.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, so that's pretty brutal, right?
Pretty
there.
Pretty brutal. Yeah, that is. Kim.
I'm sure Pilate had a great concern about keeping the Jews in their place right now because of all the number of people that were now there because of the Passover.
Mm-hmm.
If things started to get rowdy, the potential for them to get really, really bad was pretty high.
Yeah, and fast. And I mean, it could be, there's so many people there, I'm not sure what size of the Roman guard was there. I'm sure it was increased during this time. But, I mean, there were tens of thousands of Jews there. I mean, what if they were to all get wound up at one time? I mean, a pilot wants to get this thing done, you know, quickly. And, two, keep in mind what time of night or day or whatever this is. It's likely, like, very, you know, 5-6 o'clock in the morning time frame. It's very early. I can only imagine, like, they woke him up, you know, and he wants to get this done. Everybody get on their way. Let's just have some peace. Let's go get breakfast. You know, let's be done. You know, kind of a thing. And it's not going to work that way, at least as he thought. You know, in order to see Pilate, where was Jesus taken? What's the text says? Where was Jesus taken? And what is this place? Where was he taken? Praetorium. Praetorium. I mean, that's a word we would like never use, but it basically means a judgment seat, or it's like a courtyard, is what we would think of. Now, I didn't put these maps up tonight, but if you kind of remember when we were looking at a map that kind of showed like the city of Jerusalem over here is the Garden of Gethsemane, and they come up to the upper city where Caiaphas' house was. There's been some remnants found. I don't think they have this nailed down as much as they do Caiaphas' house. There's a fairly high confidence that this is Caiaphas' house because of the remnants that was found inside. But most believe that it was just down that street, a little bit farther, or up that street, whichever you would say, is where the praetorium was down, because Herod had a palace. And that it was probably somewhere close, or maybe even connected to the courtyard of Herod's palace, where the praetorium, or the judgment seat was at. It's probably somewhere right there. So they didn't have to take him very far, you know, to go down here and to see Pilate. You know, with the fact that the Romans were in charge of Judea and Palestine, they were the ones to make all decisions on the cases that involved capital punishment. And that's what the Jews were requesting with regard to Jesus. And so it was the Jews then, to, you know, the law of the land, it was the Jews that would have to make that judgment on that. So the Jews had to go to Pilate, the Roman governor, to secure condemnation of the Lord. That's why they were going there. But now, did you notice that when they got to the praetorium, why did the Jews not go in? Didn't want to be defiled. What's that mean? What's that about? They
were already
defiled. True point. But I don't think that's what they were thinking, Frank. Yes. Well, if they were to go into that courtyard of a Gentile, the food that would be there would have yeast, wouldn't be unleavened. Remember, it's Passover. And they're trying to prepare themselves for the Passover feast here the next day, or day after, you know, whenever this is, it's coming up here. And so, you know, they couldn't be anywhere around this leavened bread I mean, they went to Pilate, who was a Gentile, but they weren't going to go in his house, so to speak. And so that's why they stayed outside. It's interesting to me that Pilate was willing to come up to them. You know, I mean, again, that a slight indication of some fairness here. I mean, he could have very well sat in there on his judgment seat and said, "You want to talk to me, you Jews? You come on in here." But he didn't do that. That's just, I mean, maybe this is part of his, let's just get this done and over with. And he went out to them twice. He went out to them. Now he called Jesus, you know, to come. What was Pilate's first response to the Jews when he went out to them? What did he say?
Yeah.
You're judges in and of yourself. I mean, why can't you take care of this? You know, but maybe first it was, you know, what is your accusation? What is the charge here? You know, but it was, you know, you're judges. You can do this. On our page 55 says, it seems the Jews thought that Pilate would simply return a verdict as that they desired. Why was he not so quick to do that? Why was Pilate not so quick just to say, oh, you want a guilty charge? Guilty. Guards, take him away. Why was he not so quick to do that?
He was trying.
One place in that
okay. Later on in the story, there's going to be that element. Does he know about that at this point? I don't know. I don't think so. I think that's something that happens later, and that's going to kind of add to the drama, you know, at that point. Jennifer, what do you think?
Didn't the Romans have they were the ones in our judicial system supposed to be based on, you know, the trial and everything being fair. And I think he was trying to be fair.
It seems to me like he's trying to be fair in the process here in the questions.
Well, I would presume he was conducting himself according to Roman law.
Right.
And he did not want to do anything that would come back on him and say, you know, you acted
yeah.
illegally here.
That's right. And to him, it seems like, you know, it's a pretty simple matter. I mean, you have your own law. Make your judgment. But the Jews couldn't do that.
Pilate's given Jesus more consideration than the Jewish leaders did.
Oh, yeah.
And he seems to be giving Jesus presumption of innocence and too quick to guilt, whereas right. they had given Jesus presumption of guilt,
yeah.
period.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I think it's interesting that he says, you take him and judge him according to your,
law.
Uh-huh. Which they could not condemn him according to their law.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, that, you know, Christ was sinless, innocent.
Yeah.
That was really the whole point of his sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good thought. What else? Good comments here. So we see that Pilate was not willing to make a sentence simply on their charge without there being some process of trial. And he understood very quickly that they were looking for a capital punishment kind of verdict, you know, and so it's a life or death kind of a thing. You know, ultimately, they're going to get the satisfaction that they want. But, you know, what if they didn't? I mean, the Jews at this point are just so wound up and mad and angry. Speculate too much, but I mean, don't you kind of wonder, what would they have done? What if they couldn't have got this done? I mean, you think about Stephen in Acts chapter 7. When he preached to the Jewish leaders about their stiff-necked, you know, and not following the law, they got so angry that they took justice in their own hands and they stoned Stephen.
Well, they took up stones to stone Jesus at least one other time.
Yeah.
So they were there.
They are there. But you know, Jesus has already said what manner of death that he would die from. And so this is going to go through according to God's plan, you know, at this point. Just thinking, going back to Matthew's account for a second here. Going back to Matthew chapter 20, going back in time just a little bit. Matthew chapter 20, when Jesus was teaching his disciples, he's got the 12 with him at this point. Matthew 20, verse 17. And Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and scourge and to crucify. In the third day he will rise again." And so Jesus already has prophesied what manner of death he will face. And so when we're reading now through John's account, well, even through the other accounts too, leading up to this point, you know, we kind of already know that there's not going to be a mad mob that stones him to death, because Jesus already said what kind of death he would face. So we know that that's going to play out, you know, that way. On the bottom, page 55, what kind of infraction would Jesus be involved in that would be a concern to Pilate? I don't like the question. It's not worded very well. What I'm trying to make us think about here, was Pilate worried about Jewish law? What is it that Jesus could have done that would have got the attention of Pilate and make Pilate think, oh, wait a minute now, we got to deal with this? Yeah. Why would that concern Pilate? Pilate wasn't a king.
Because he gets his boss.
That's right. That's right. You know, I mean, and this becomes the line of questioning that comes up. Are you a king then? You know, if there was anything that Jesus said that would somehow make a threat against Caesar, you know, against the Roman government, well, then Pilate he'd be willing to quickly take action on that. You know, and so that's the charge the Jews are going to make. He says he's a king.
He didn't say that he wasn't.
He does. And when he has to give questions, are you a king? He answers that. You know, and so he's going to deal with that. But even when he says that, it doesn't concern Pilate because of what Jesus says after that. So Anyway, we're just kind of processing some of these things through. You know, what the Jews basically present to Pilate, they're accusing him of, maybe you can say it this way, they're accusing him of a political crime. It's a crime that has something to do with the politics among the Jews. And Pilate doesn't necessarily see that as a, you know, that's not a threat against the Roman government. And that, again, goes back to, you know, y'all take care of your own problems. You have your law. Make a judgment against by your own law. You know, he saw this as, this was a Jewish problem and saw it that way. Let's go back here in the text again. Go back to Luke chapter 22. About the same time here. Luke chapter 23. In fact, we're going to read a little bit out of Luke tonight just to get a broader spectrum of the events here as they're unfolding. Luke chapter 23 and verse 1. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." I find this to be an interesting statement. I mean, they've already tried to gather up some false accusers, and they were not successful at that. Well, now they've become false accusers themselves. I mean, they're trying to say that Jesus has told people not to pay taxes to Caesar. Well, that's just a lie. I mean, that's exactly opposite of what Jesus said. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's. And so that kind of stood out to me. I mean, the point that these Jewish leaders have come to, I mean, blatantly lying now to make accusation, you know, against the Lord. Verse 3. And Pilate asked him, that is, asked Jesus, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered and said, "It is as you say." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and to the people, "I find no fault with this man." But they were the more furious, saying, "He stirs up all the people, teaching them throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee, you know, to this place." Well, that might have got the attention of Pilate a little bit more. You know, that this man's stirring things up. We don't need things stirred up now. Let's keep things quiet. That might have got his attention just a little bit more. But, you know, still to be able to say that he is a threat against Caesar, he doesn't see a charge there. It's interesting that in Luke's account here, we might find that, you know, Pilate, that is, sees maybe a way of escape. I'm getting ahead of myself just a little bit here. But he sees a way of escape because Herod is in town too. Luke's account tells us about that. We're going to come back to Luke's account here in just a few minutes. Think about this question. You know, Pilate's question to Jesus, "What have you done?" I mean, you know, he can see that the Jews are like incredibly stirred up. I mean, they're riled, they're mad. You know, it's like a little mob here. You know, they're ready to have Jesus killed. "What have you done?" I mean, you had to have done something to incite this kind of anger here. And I've wondered that this must be somewhat perplexing, you know, to Pilate. How could there be so much hatred over Jewish religious laws? I mean, how could it lead to this point? You know, and really and truly, Pilate had little concern about Jewish law. He had bigger fish to fry, so to speak. Bigger things like that. Page 55 still. Jesus, here's a question. Jesus explained to Pilate, "My kingdom is not of this world." In what way would that statement ease the mind of Pilate?
No threat to the Roman Empire.
This is what Pilate's concerned about. I mean, don't do anything that's going to get my boss mad at me, and sure don't get his boss mad at Caesar. You know, and so when Jesus said, you know, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." you know, Pilate seems to be satisfied, you know, with that answer. And so he could see it. Jesus was not, you know, posing a threat to the Roman Empire. In verse 37, again, you know, Jesus said, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." How did Jesus define his purpose? You just think about that verse. How did Jesus define his purpose?
He was born to fulfill it.
Yeah. In some ways, Jesus said everything that could be said right here about who he was and his purpose. He came to bear witness of the truth. I mean, that's a point that just stands out in the text to me. Jesus never denied being a king. Well, in fact, he said he was a king. He replied with his purpose regarding that. And think for a moment, too, what Jesus was offering to Pilate here. Think of it in this term. What was Jesus offering Pilate? Think about that for a second. This is it. I mean, if while we have said, you know, Pilate seems like he was kind of fair, you know, about his trial here and didn't find guilt. Three times he's going to say, or, you know, I find no guilt in him. You know, I think he was being honest about that. But did Pilate have an honest heart? I mean, Jesus offers him. I mean, right? I mean, this was, if Pilate wanted to know what was going on, if Pilate wanted to understand what has Jesus been teaching that has these people riled up, Jesus right here is he's standing there bound, and he's given an opportunity, you know, what you've said is right, I am a king. This is the reason I was born, to be king. And I came for that reason into the world. And I have come to bear witness of the truth. And Pilate could have said, I want to know more about that. I mean, well, whatever you've been saying, you know, has certainly incited a lot of attention by these Jewish leaders. Tell me about the truth that you're speaking of. How did Pilate respond? What is truth? That's how he responded. What is truth? I'm not sure how he responded. Was it sarcastic? What is truth? But it wasn't. What is truth? He wasn't asking that kind of a question because it came to an end.
You're right. We don't know exactly was it sarcasm or not. Maybe it would be more of a flippant answer of not really wanting to know because of the last verse thing that Jesus says, everyone who is of the truth
hears my voice.
Honestly, he was not of the truth.
Because he didn't want to hear.
That's right, didn't want to hear.
Think about what Jesus has said previously about hearing his voice. What has he said? My sheep will hear my voice and they'll know me. And it's just interesting to me that here is a statement that he makes that is so much like that. It was in the way of that earthly story before. He was talking to his disciples. You know, a good shepherd knows his sheep, and they know his voice. He said, I am the good shepherd, remember? You know, and my sheep know my voice. And so, I mean, and here he is now, you know, saying, you know, I've come into the world that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. A consistent message. And the judgment that we can make about Pilate now is he was not going to be a disciple of Jesus because he was not willing to hear his voice. Now we know a little more about Pilate, don't we? By the words of Jesus. Other times about going to the other comments, questions? What are your thoughts?
I find it interesting that the Jews would not defile themselves by going into the palace, mm-hmm. presumably so that they wouldn't become ceremonially unclean, and not be able to take the Passover that night. Yet Jesus was taken in there and didn't object to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, they would not have objected him going in there because he's defiled anyway. Yeah, I thought about that.
Talking about the contrast of the Jews killing Stephen and Christ, they knew he was innocent. This is the only way they could say, "See, his blood is not on our hands."
Mm-hmm.
That it's the Passover. Mm-hmm. Certain things are just. Will defile you,
mm-hmm.
and the taking of innocent blood could be one of those. And by trying to force Pilate to be the bad guy,
to make the judgment,
they can say, "See, we didn't
clean hands.
We didn't."
Yeah. So dirty hands. But they're going to be. Able, they think they can walk away and say, "This was Pilate's judgment. Our hands are clean." But we see who has dirty hands. Good discussion tonight. Appreciate your good comments. Lord willing, we'll take up there at the bottom of page 55 on Sunday.